How do you do? This is Ted Collins. Once again, it is my pleasure to introduce to you America's most beloved personality. Here she is, Kate Smith.
Hello, everybody. Today I have a letter from a local girl to read to you. She lives right here in New York City, and in her daily work, she operates under what many of her fellow workers have called combat conditions. Beverly is her name, and she drives a taxi cab. According to our lady taxi driver, who, incidentally, is the mother of three grown-up children, conditions on New York streets get to be truly combative. Beverly writes me that she was driving along one of our streets one day when an auto whizzed by. "Dear Miss Smith," she goes on to say, "from here on in, please follow me very carefully. I would probably have paid no attention to our whizzing by friend except that smoke was pouring out of the rear windows of his car, and I could only assume that he was on fire somewhere and didn't know it. Well, right away, two policemen came running up, and they told me to follow the car. I stepped on the gas, and I blew my horn just like you see in the movies. By this time, a fire engine had joined in the chase with us. And by this time, the car ahead was billowing smoke all over the place. For some reason or other, the driver of the car kept turning corners, and we began to think, as well as being on fire, that maybe also he might be an escaped convict. The police were about to start firing warning shots at the tires, or whatever they do, when finally the car pulled up to the curb and stopped. The fireman put out the blaze, and the policeman pulled the frightened and coughing driver out of the car. He had his license and all identification and seemed to be no criminal. 'Didn't you know that you were on fire?' asked one of the policemen. 'Sure,' said the man. 'Well, then why didn't you stop?' He said, 'You think I wanted to get a fine? There are no parking signs all along here.' I ask you, Miss Smith, who is ever again going to accuse us New Yorkers of not being law-abiding citizens?" Well, I wouldn't know, Beverly. We have always known that the weather can be a thing as changing as the moods of a temperamental lady, and as contrary. You remember the old saying, the surest way to get rain is to plan a picnic? We're pretty much slaves to weather. In Southern California, the oranges are now both sun-kissed and kerosene-warmed, for down every orchard stretches a row of smudge pots calculated to combat the whims of the weather. A sudden drop in the temperature in the Santa Clara Valley when the buds are on the trees has the farmer simply frantic, for the prune and apricot crops tremble in the balance, as do the peaches in North Carolina, the wheat in the Midwest, and the grapes in the Northwest. A change in the mood of the weather and the crops are lost. To the man who lives in the country, to the man who has a garden, to the farmer and to the rancher, the weather is a constant and inexorable influence. All his labors depend upon it. Too much or too little rain, sudden frost, or destructive winds are all deciding factors in his life. The fledgling farmer soon finds himself consulting thermometers and barometers and reading and rereading weather forecasts. He also learns odd countryside weather legends and comes to depend on the ones such as rain before 7, clear before 11. Although such old country weather jingles may not be highly scientific, the amazing thing about them to me is that most of them are true. Suspect rain? Cast a weather eye around outdoors, and what do you notice? Well, the first thing you see is that the leaves on the trees turn back. And you listen for the crickets. Their songs are loud and clear. And the frogs seem to change color, appearing more brown than green. And have you ever noticed how the fireflies are so very, very bright? It's interesting to recall old weather rhymes about such things because, irrespective of time or country, they're essentially the same. The observations of people who live close to the soil have a certain oneness regardless of country or clime. They may express it in varying ways, but the wheat farmers in Kansas and Siberia and the cotton raisers in Egypt and Tennessee agree that a mackerel sky is very wet or very dry. And they'll all know the wisdom of this saying, between 12 and 2, you'll see what the day will do. Both those rhymes are quite cautious as far as prophecy is concerned, but then we all know that caution is one of the countryman's chief virtues. He doesn't believe in rash promises because he's been deceived too often by the weather. The weatherman certainly never made more poetic observation than the one I heard a farmer's wife make to me just a few years ago. She assured me, and I'd like to quote her now, that when the wind is in the south, 'tis in the rain's mouth. When the wind is in the east, 'tis neither good for man or beast. Quotations about the weather. We all know them. We all measure the day's weather by them at one time or another. What about the time-honored rainbow at night, sailor's delight, rainbow at morning, sailors take warning? Most farmers, with all the scientific forecasts now available to them, will scan the countryside, cast a weather eye at the sky, and glance at the clock on the shelf to see if it's 7 o'clock yet, for they have great faith that if there's rain before 7, it'll clear before 11.
Before a world so new, as we go on our way, we know come what may.
as a follow-up to my chat yesterday about wives holding down part-time jobs, I just want to say I've been bombarded with letters and even phone calls. So I'm afraid I'd better explain more carefully and a little further before the men folks take our vote away from us. Now, first of all, let me repeat what I said yesterday so emphatically. The wife should certainly have the wholehearted approval of her husband before she takes such a step. But, gentlemen, don't you think that if the lady of the house thinks she has good and sufficient reason to earn a little more or to keep a little busier, you ought to hear her out? In any event, ladies, here are a list of questions that you ought to ask yourself before you take any steps. First, an outside job may free you from routine household tasks, but it isn't going to exempt you from the responsibility of managing your home. Now, are you up to it physically as well as emotionally? Second, will your youngsters be all right? If you can't be 100% sure about this, it's not a bad idea to discuss it with a pediatrician or a child psychologist. Or perhaps you'd like to talk it over with a teacher or teachers of the children. Third, don't abandon the idea if you can't answer these questions instantly. Remember, some women, stimulated by their jobs, find it easier than ever to keep house. Perhaps you need just this impetus to manage and plan with more enthusiasm. This going forth into the outside world may also awaken better relationships between you and your children. These are my suggestions, and in presenting them, I've been helped immeasurably by a publication called Changing Times, which carefully tabulates and authenticates all this information. So you see, really, I didn't say it. They did. And now a message of interest to you. Forget it. Well, sometimes that's a good idea, but there are times when forgetting something can lead to some pretty unpleasant consequences. And the VA says it can be serious when a veteran carelessly forgets about something important for him and for other veterans. That's the veteran who makes an appointment for a medical exam or for a treatment at a VA clinic and then lets it slide by and does nothing about it. So veterans, keep your VA date. If for some reason you can't, be sure to get in touch with VA right away and cancel your date. If possible, notify them 24 hours ahead of time. Give some other veteran a chance to use that time. When you break two straight appointments with no reasonable excuse, you risk having your outpatient treatment at the VA clinic come to a very sudden end. So if you make an appointment and you can't keep it, please cancel promptly. Play fair with VA doctors and nurses and with other veterans. Message of interest to you. In your community, there's a happy man who is finding new pleasure in laughter and the warmth of his friends, things that many of us take for granted. This man suffered from a serious but common emotional illness, and he might still be suffering if it weren't for new research and treatment. How many others, men and women, are there like him? Perhaps right in your neighborhood or right in your office. Well, 1 in every 10 Americans suffer from some kind of mental or emotional disturbance. They need treatment, and they need understanding, and that's where you come in. In order to help, you must know the facts about emotional and mental illness, and how more people can be restored to happiness and mental health. So today, send for a free booklet called How to Deal with Your Tensions. Write to Better Mental Health, Box 3000, New York 1, New York. Well, I'm going to leave you now for the weekend. Please drive carefully and be sure to attend the house of worship of your choice. My guests for today were Nelson Riddle and his orchestra, Vic Damone, the Lancers, Ray Caniff, and his orchestra. Thanks for listening, and goodbye, folks.
I'll go my way by myself. Music and comedy.